This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Match Report. I'm your host, Mike Scott, and with me are Chris Clark, Councillor Chris Clark, and Nick Gillard, as we look back at a Friday night under that light that pissed people off and we all signed a petition against down at the Amex. We'll also have a look at recent Palace news, go over listener comments and feedback, and talk about that Brighton fan who invaded the pitch ahead of one of the worst penalties we've collectively ever seen. Gentlemen, yeah, how are you doing? How are you both doing? Nick, you good?
Yeah, not bad. Finally got some antibiotics, so hopefully I won't sound like a fucking lozenges advert for the next 6 months. But yeah, it was a bit discombobulated by Friday night kickoff. The weekend seemed a little bit strange. Trying to get my head around the fact that the game seems a very long time ago, but it wasn't really.
Well, I mean, antibiotics can fix what you sound like, but it can't fix what you're saying, can it? And Chris, are you equally confused by the Friday night kickoff? You doing all right?
It was a weird shape for a weekend, but yeah, I mean, 48 hours later, I'm just about recovered from the joy of unlimited Harvey's on tap. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about a point away at the Amex and a lot of pints away at the Amex as well.
Presumably you started with the HF as well in a Harvey's pub, right?
Well, actually, I met them in an undisclosed pub in Croydon for a few drinks before Nick then picked me up and we drove down to the game. It took me ages to find him
because he wouldn't disclose where the pub was. So I visited 16 of them before I found one that he was outside. But the car club was good, wasn't it? DR was on form, wasn't he, Chris?
Oh, yeah. I mean, among things, DR asked during the journey, who invented light? Which was one of the more weird questions I've ever been asked. I mean, last time I looked, it was God, according to the Bible. It's one of the first lines in it. He also asked, is it just me who thought that traffic lights were white and we just called them green? You have to ask DR to explain that one, but...
The fact that he doesn't smoke anything as well is just—it's just amazing. Well, I mean, DR, if you follow us on YouTube, then you get to hear the rantings of the genius that is DR Kernas, and I'm sure you know him very well. Well, let's get on from that, shall we? And let's talk about some Palace news this week. First of all, and I missed this. I mainly got updates on the WhatsApp chat from Patrick O'Connor, but the under-18s. Unbelievable when you read about it. So after 10 minutes, this was the fourth round of the FA Youth Cup. After 10 minutes, we went 1-0 up against Wolves. Ola Adebomi with a goal. And then right up until the 93rd, 94th minute, winning 1-0. Wolves equalise in stoppage time, then go and win 6-5 on penalties. Must have been absolutely gutting for the boys. I mean, if you sat through it as well... yeah, it must have been horrible. I can't think of many worse situations for someone to go in other than to say that that's probably pretty character building and all of those kind of cliches. The under-23s, the preview guys already covered their game, but they do have a game tomorrow on the day of recording, Monday the 17th, at home to Chelsea. So those of you skipping work to go and see that, good on you. The women today, at the day of recording, excellent game all the way up to Durham. 2-2 at half time. Ended up winning 3-2. Held on for quite a long period of the second half. Goals from Molly Mae Sharp, Lizzie Wildy, who defender, great goal, and then the winner from Siobhan Wilson. So 3-2 win there for those of you that went up. And I know there will be a couple of listeners there that will have driven up. That is that's pretty rewarding. I would have thought. I heard of a few people, not least Chewy, previously of this parish, who drove up to Sunderland only for the pitch to be frozen and the game to not go on. So that must have been a pretty rewarding 200-odd mile drive back home. In fact, you'll still be doing it at the time of recording, so this is pretty irrelevant. Getting on to signings, because obviously we are in the transfer window. We haven't really talked about it, and not many Palace people have, simply because it doesn't seem like we need that many people, really. But we'll go through what has happened. I'm going to give a go at pronouncing this guy's name, if you two want to correct me. So, the academy player, Adler Nascimento. Do you reckon that's spot on? Do you reckon that's terrible?
It's either that or Nascimento.
Nascimento. Okay. Yeah, well, I don't speak Portuguese. If anyone does, do correct us. So he previously played for Peterborough United, albeit I think probably only one or two games. Debuted for them as a 16-year-old. So obviously a bright talent, has got himself a professional contract. And then Joshua Adai, he's been added to the under-18 squad, the high-flying under-18 squad. So let's see how he does. Exciting times for those gentlemen. They both joined Killian Phillips, who the preview guys talked about before. Doesn't seem to have a Twitter, so fair enough. If you don't have to have one, definitely don't have one. And in terms of loans, James Taylor, decent stalwart for the under-23s. He's gone over to Tonbridge.
Has he got a friend there? So that's a James Taylor joke. Don't worry, carry on. Only the old people will get that one.
No, you need to explain it now. Like, what's
James
that?
Taylor, the immense recording artist from the 60s onwards, had a big hit with a song called You've Got a Friend.
Is that the song off Toy Story?
No, that's what's his face? You've Got a Friend in Me. I can't think of the bloke's name, but he plays the piano as well. He's very famous, but that's not James Taylor. James Taylor went out with Carole King for a while. As he said, talk about football, Jack.
To say who's that?
Moving swiftly on.
One for the kids there.
Yeah, well, definitely. Mind you, you know, plenty of older listeners and probably more than there are young kids listening. So a fair point. For those of you that understood that reference, I apologise. I hold my hands up and say my argument is I wasn't born. But yeah, this is an interesting one. J. Rich Bagaloo, obviously Australian international, has been let go and he's gone to Atkinson Stanley. I think he probably hasn't come on quite as much as some people expected, and I think it's great that he's got himself a League One club. Palace invested a lot into him. You guys got any thoughts on that?
It is what it is, isn't it? It's obviously not done as well as we want. So, you know. In other news, can I mention while we're talking about transfers, what do you make of this Benteke to Burnley nonsense? I mean, people are talking 20 million. Is it worth letting him go for that much near the end of his contract? Or would we be foolish to get rid of someone who's become a bit of a ledge for us? What do you reckon?
I mean, for me, it's a no-brainer in that he is an absolute integral part of the first team. And the last thing we want is Burnley to replace Chris Wood. Let's see him go down. Bad enough of them. That's my thought, Chris.
Yeah, I think he'd be a big miss for us. And, you know, I mean, we're about to talk about the Brighton game. And I think that, you know, in some respects, we missed Benteke in, you know, during that game because, you know, you could see that we were trying to play the ball to feet and we missed the out ball. But Edouard just isn't the same at connecting with balls in the air. And we need Benteke in that long out ball option.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good segue to get onto the game. We'll keep you updated on any transfer updates that come through the rest of the month. But I'd imagine there are going to be a lot of under-18s and under-23s signings So yeah, let's crack on with that, shall we? And we can start with discussing the front three because it was a relatively hot topic before the game. It's not a front three that had started before. So with Edouard in the middle, Elise obviously keeping his place after an incredible game against Millwall and Eze. I think we can bring up what the front players have different in their armoury. So Edouard, Mateta and Benteke, assuming that Nketi is not going to be a January signing, could well be the three for the rest of the season. So Andy Hose, Andy the Twat, said Mateta made a difference when he came on. Link-up plays, holding the ball, should have started. Generally, that's what Benteke does. Andy Hode said, I can't believe it, but is it worth keeping him? What is it that those three players have that the other two don't? I mean, start with Mateta, go with you, Nick, and then we'll see what Edouard did, and then we'll touch on Benteke again.
Well, he kind of became a bit of a scapegoat, didn't he? And we were saying, oh, the only thing he's ever...
Mateta did.
Yeah, the only thing he's ever done for us is score that cheeky goal against Brighton. But really, it seemed that he just didn't have enough game time. And the more game time he's having, the better he seems to be becoming, which is, you know, that's going to happen anyway, isn't it? So, yeah, perhaps he'd have been better off starting. But looking at that front three that we did start with, it's kind of what we dreamed of, isn't it? It's the dream three that we've spoken about in awe since they've all kind of signed for us. So it's good to see that for the first time, though perhaps not against Brighton, perhaps we should have done it against Hartlepool. But with players out at AFCON, I know we're going to talk about that in a bit, but needs must. So, you know, hopefully it will gel a bit more. But
Edouard would have been your starting player, yeah?
Possibly on the wing rather than in the middle. I'd have started with Mateta myself.
So Edouard and Mateta and what, Eze?
Eze, I think, is better in a cam position further up the pitch. But not on the wing.
A cam position. Your thoughts, Chris? Touch on what Edouard brought and what Mateta brought.
Well, you know, I mean, on paper, this is a really exciting front three. And Elise definitely justified that starting position. Edouard didn't have his best game. I mean, I like him coming in from the wing. I just think that seems to be a better position for him in terms of how he links up with other players for us. And I think we're better having, we definitely wanted, and I think we lacked a target player, a target man up front. You know, whether that was Benteke or whether that was Mateta, for me, that would have been the change I would have made. It would have been not playing Eze, who obviously wasn't fit to play 90 minutes. I know we want to see him play, but I'd rather not be rolling him out when he's not ready to play more than about 60 minutes. He didn't play at his best in this game. I mean, for me, it would have been Edouard on the left. Whether it was Mateta or Benteke would have been a toss-up. But given that Mateta's in form, they've both got form of scoring goals in this game, they did last year, I would probably have started with Mateta and then had Benteke on the bench ready to double up when they're getting tired.
Yeah, fair enough. I think for me, I don't really mind who starts. I thought, considering only going by how bitty games have been against Brighton the last few years, Benteke probably would have been my choice for the hold-up play. And Hambo did say in the last match report, he thought that Mateta was a proper old-school centre-forward that got into the six-yard box and was confused when people are asking him, you know, what positioning he was setting up for X, Y, and Z. He just said, you know, I stand there and I wait for the ball and I head it. You know, that's a proper old school forward. But, you know, Andy here's thinking that, he links up, holds up the ball well. So maybe there is more to him than we initially thought. Or maybe none of us know what we're talking about. But either way, I think you're right. The Edouard experiment, maybe try it again against Hartlepool, but I do think it was a little bit lightweight. Needs someone with a bit more grit to hold up the ball. And the other thing is, what could any of them have done when we got three shots in, didn't have any set pieces, very few corners? I think they were all fighting a fairly losing battle.
Yes. Interestingly, the story about Pathetic going to St. Etienne seems to have quieted down a bit, which is good as well. So I'm quite happy about that. I'd be quite happy to keep him.
Well, I mean, let's just mention Jerry Cole's comment on Facebook. What's your feelings and thoughts about Palace signing Mateta permanently? I guess that's yours, Nick. Quick one from you, Chris.
100%. Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. He, you know, I mean, apart from anything else, Benteke may be on the move. He's out of contract this summer, isn't he? So I think it's, you know, he's clearly got something to offer. I'd let, you know, let's get to the end of the season and see how he's done. But if he carries on playing the way he is, then I think we absolutely should snap him up.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. And just a shout out to Jerry to say that he ended his message with best wishes, which I very much appreciate. There's not enough politeness in social media, so well done, Jerry.
I did see him at the game, actually, and he shouted down. He was about 5 rows behind, and he said, give my regards to the back of the nest crew. So here I am.
Excellent. I mean, yes, very high in our estimations then, Jerry. So I want to ask a question from Dave at Brighter Skies on Twitter. Would we have played further up the pitch if we'd had the missing AFCON players available? Basically, I think let's put that another way as well. What were we missing because of the fact that Zaha, Ayew and perhaps Coate weren't there?
It was tricky because Brighton's main tactic seemed to be the ball over the top, didn't it? Luckily, we were able to deal with that quite well. That's what I noticed more than ever. But
I think their main tactic was being much better than us, and we didn't deal with any of it quite well. But I don't know if I'm... Carry on.
Yeah, no, that to me, maybe it was where I was sitting because I was right behind the goal and the crossbar was in my eye line, so I was either having to duck down below to see up the other end of the pitch or stand on tiptoe or stand on my seat to see the other end of the pitch. But yeah, you're right, they were a lot better than us, but there were lots of balls over the top that I thought that we dealt with quite well. Perhaps if we were higher up the pitch, pressuring them more, that may have worked a little bit better. But we didn't have enough out balls or skillful players to deal with that. We did sit back a bit and let them come at us, which, you know, as the way teams sometimes you do a bit more often.
Yeah. Chris?
I think what we were missing was the experience and guile of some of those players. You know, I mean, obviously Zaha's got the head for a big occasion, but, you know, on paper, I would have said that I'd expect us to be playing, you know, really quite high up the pitch when you look at that front three that we'd got playing. You know, we'd got Eze, we'd got Edouard, and we'd got Elise. You know, that those are exciting attacking players, and I would have thought we'd have been playing up high. But that certainly wasn't the case, and I think that, you know, Dave is probably onto something there, that, you know, what we lacked was the ability to hold up the ball and let players catch up, once we'd won it in an upper position. And, you know, that was pretty transparent that, you know, there just wasn't the backup. Will Hughes is a great player and I'm really enjoying watching him play for us. But I think, you know, we're missing Jimmy Mack quite badly. That's no not a controversial statement by any means. But, you know, Hughes is not the kind of Luca Chiarte player that, you know, we might have imagined he was going to be before we got to see how he plays. He's combative for sure, but yeah, that's not what he's good at.
Yeah, I'll add a bit there. I'll play the Hambo role. So obviously Potter had said to Brighton, make sure you press high. They play out from the back. Let's make sure they have no space. Anderson, very comfortable with that. Gay, very comfortable with that. Mitchell, fairly comfortable with that. Wardy, I think it's never going to be his game. And I think some of the abuse that he got after the game was very harsh. He made a massive error that we were lucky to not go 1-0 down for. And he seems to have been asked to start headering the ball, you know, pass headering, which doesn't seem to suit him. I counted 3 times where he lost the ball in a bad position by headering it. To try and get to one of our players. So they only had to hit the weak spots of this passing game to stress everyone out. And once we'd lost the ball a couple of times early on from simple mistakes, then everyone was on edge. Not to mention the fact that, you know, Butler had a pretty bad game against Millwall. So, you know, new back two with a new keeper, it's always tough. So they exploited that. And as the game went on, it was clear that we didn't have an answer for it. I'm not sure that playing further forward would have made that much difference unless we literally not decided to play our normal game. And that's not the way Vieira's going to go. So I think when we get Ferguson in, you know, those missing pieces, four players that are comfortable playing it slowly from the back, that'll be fine. Yes, we missed out a few options to hold the ball up and ones to run forward. There was points in the game again when Elise was great at that. And then other times when it didn't happen for 20 minutes at a time. And I think that's probably why Elise is majority of the time still a substitute in the moment. We're missing Zaha. We've discussed it last pod about, is this the first time that we've got a properly decent Palace squad without Zaha? Yes, but it's still in progress. It's still only one transfer window in. So we're playing the type of football we are, and there's still limitations. I think Palace won't make those mistakes again because obviously other teams now will just watch what Brighton did. Nick?
I think Schlupp is the kind of wonky piece in that midfield as well at the moment. I think he's better as a winger. I know he's a utility player who can supposedly play anywhere, but he again looked a little bit lost in there. Until we got somebody who could maybe replace him. I know Milivojevic is coming on as a sub now, and he's said he's had a bit of a difficult time since his dad sadly died, and he's not really come back as strongly as he'd like to. But yeah, Schlupp perhaps is the wrong fit for that midfield.
Chris?
Well, the other thing I wanted to highlight was, you know, you've mentioned Wardy. I think Mitchell struggled in this game. I mean, if you look at the stats, even the Who Scored mentioned that Brighton had a lot of success attacking down the right-hand side. And, you know, I think that's probably partially due to a lack of cover. You know, because I think he had Eze in front of him, didn't he? So, you know, and Eze was not as mobile as we are used to. You know, when he got his boots on, he could run, but he wasn't, you know, running up and down in the way that someone like Jordan Ayew might do, or Wilf. You know, I mean, Wilf has obviously had that trained into him over the years, but, you know, I think there was definitely an issue with Tyrick getting caught a number of times, and he needs a little bit of extra help. And, you know, he wasn't getting that from this midfield setup. And it's important to note that.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Absolutely, definitely. And when Tarek Lamptey came on, obviously he shouldn't be at Brighton. He should do his level best to fuck off somewhere better at the earliest possible opportunity. But not only, I think they said he was the fastest player in the Premier League last season, when they measured speed. But also, he has tremendous skill, and you can't operate as a single left back without cover, you know, really strong cover. And Brighton exploited that as well. You're absolutely right. The one positive I would say is it looks like Elise is, you know, he backed up Wardy really well, and he's taken to his defensive duties very quickly. And yet again, you know, promising stuff from Elise, and I'm sure it'll only come on leaps and bounds. I'd imagine he's going to get another game against Hartlepool, even if he doesn't start against Liverpool. So yeah, let's cover the defence a bit, and let's cover mainly the keeper. So a question from William Pickering on Twitter: is Butland our new first choice keeper? So I'm going to answer that very quickly, Will, and say no. Greatest, just the man, and it would take a lot to dispose him. But I wanted to mention the fact that I thought he was far more commanding for crosses. I wasn't sure whether Brighton were just putting in loopier, slower ones. It seemed like they were. A lot of them kind of wasted, and you know, that's the fact that they had so many chances and only scored one, and it wasn't even them that scored it. I think some of their crosses were wasted, but I'll leave the final word to Pethos on Twitter, at Pethos7. We were far better at defending crosses and corners than in previous games, especially from Gaye and Anderson. We definitely worked on that. I think a lot of that is that Butland came out and took the ball, and he was happy to punch as well. So from in the ground, your thoughts on Jack Butland? Right, start with you, Nick.
Yeah, right from the off, he had the backing of the support behind that goal. They were chanting his name straight away, and even more so. It was good that he was forgiven for his Millwall mistake. And I think it was, somebody said in the last show that he'd actually gone, I think it might be you, Mike, that said he came up at the end and sort of apologised to the fans.
Yeah, so he did, yeah.
He had the support right behind him. And I think that helped him with his confidence because he pulled off some absolutely fantastic saves. And after the first save, I think he just grew in confidence. And he knows he's fighting for a place and he knows that he can't be making any more mistakes. So it was a good performance and just as good, if not better, than some greater performances we've seen. So, yeah, all power to him.
Okay. And Chris, talk about the workings between the back pairing and Butland. They seemed stronger for set pieces, and Brighton had a metric shit ton of corners.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, obviously, I mean, we're going to, I suppose, we always end up saying these kinds of things. Oh, we're going to come on to this. Let's talk about the goal straight away that they scored, that was actually scored by them and then disallowed. Butland had both hands on that. And it's important to note as well that I think that even if there hadn't been a foul on Butland, there was actually a foul on Anderson earlier than that, because I don't know who the Brighton player was, but he had his arms absolutely all around Anderson, and that was why he beat him to the ball. Because I was looking at it from a critical point of view of, you know, has Anderson failed to win a header there? And I defy any centre-back to win a header when they're being manhandled as much as Anderson was being in that case, where, you know, the player who won the ball and headed it in to the space where Butland saved it. I really think he had a good game. He communicated with the players around him, and you could definitely feel the energy coming out of him after that penalty save, albeit that it was not exactly the world's best placed penalty. Didn't make it hard for him to save, but the energy that came out of that in the crowd, it was really, really great, because I mean everyone's heads dropped when that penalty was given. Couldn't even see what it was for at the time. Yeah, you know the way it is with VAR. When
well, not everyone's head dropped, did they? There was a Brighton fan whose head definitely did not drop.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about him.
Well, just cover that now. Give us the lowdown on this particular specimen of a person.
Well, he had quite a run, didn't he? I mean, he had a decent run on him because he managed to dodge several stewards and get back into the crowd. For anyone who wasn't watching the game, and if you weren't watching the game, why are you listening to this? But a Muppet from the Brighton end, when they had, in inverted commas, taken the lead, they this individual decided to run and give us wanker signs and all sorts of abuse before the VAR call. I mean, risking what is, you know, almost certainly a stadium ban for doing something like that, and then for the goal to be disallowed was just absolute sweetness. And, you know, he was laughing at us, but he wasn't laughing by the end.
Yes, excellent stuff. On that note, actually, I was driving my kids on the A27 earlier, and obviously on the day of recording, Everton are managerless, and there's a big call for Graham Potter to replace him, and a Palace fan rung up, well, we assume it's a Palace fan rung up pretending to be a Brighton fan, saying he basically wants him gone anyway because Brighton are not doing as well as they should be doing, sitting in ninth position. It was very amusing. I'll see if we can get a link to it. I think TalkSport will probably tweet it out, but I'll get it up on the Twitter. It took about 3 or 4 minutes before I think it was Darren Bent worked out that it was actually a Palace fan in disguise. So if you're listening, kudos to you, sir. Kudos to you. I just want to talk a little bit about Will Hughes. We've seen him for a few games now. He's becoming a firm fan favourite. What did he add in that game? Did we at least have a little bit of stability from him as opposed to, say, if Luca had been starting?
Well, the first thing Luka did when he came on as a sub was a brilliant sliding tackle. So I'll give him a bit of kudos for that. No, Hughes has definitely bought into the Palace way. He's got a little bit more.
What do you mean by that?
Well, he's faced when he comes up to the fans at the end. He just, you know, he just seems to get us. I think he loves playing for us. I think he loves our fan base. And I think he'll become a legend for us. Well,
you come from Watford. It's a low bar, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, I know. But it's been around, you know, it's still quite young. And the fact that he was so young when he started, it seems like he's been around for donkey's years when he was first playing for Derby. But no, he just seems to be getting into the opposition's faces. He can be quite skillful when he wants to be. He can rile up the opposition when need be. And he seems to G everybody up really, really well. I mean, he could possibly be on for the armband in next season or the season after. I could really see that.
Would he work alongside Maka? Chris?
Well, we'll have to see as to whether it will work with Maka. But, I mean, I think we've all envisaged him as the successor figure. But he's going to be quite difficult to dislodge now. Because, you know, he's got bite in the tackle. He's got a good pass on him. And actually, I mean, we're not going to talk about the goal yet because there's other things to talk about. But Hughes' contribution to that goal, not just in terms of his pass, but in calling and communicating with others during the move, is really, really impressive.
Let's talk about it now. It's nothing to do with the fact that I forgot to put it on the show, Doc. nothing to do with that at all. Let's just talk about it now.
Okay. Well,
talk us through it.
Well, so I noted this down. We have the ball really early on down the right-hand side. Gallagher's got the ball. Elise's involved. Ward. And he then starts moving right into the centre of the pitch. I mean, Joel Ward roving into the centre of the pitch. Plays a ball to Mateta. It comes back to Ward. Hughes is then urging him to pass it upwards. So it goes to Mitchell. Hughes gets the ball, passes it up to Schlupp in the box. Schlupp on the byline does a great job to turn it central. Gallagher takes one touch and passes it into the net, really, into the only space that was available. Absolutely fantastic team goal. I think one of the questions that came in on Twitter, I'll need to scroll down to it, was, is that going to be goal of the season? I mean, I think it's got to be in the running for our goal of the season. And if it's not recognised in that kind of top 10 match of the day montage at the end of the season, it's a travesty because it really is an impressive team effort.
As soon as we saw Wardy with the ball in the box, I kind of knew we were going to score. Did you, Chris? It just felt inevitable. But what was it, 20 passes up the pitch? Brighton didn't have a clue. And it's annoying that we couldn't play like that for other spells during the game. It was the only time that we really had that much cohesion, wasn't it? But yeah, it was a special goal. And I've never known limbs like it in football. Absolutely do, Lally. DR disappeared for about 3 minutes. I had a bloke, must have come from about 3 rows behind me, flew over my head and landed 2 rows in front, and they just got up and grinned like a Cheshire cat. It was absolutely do, Lally, and I've watched lots of videos. I've never experienced anything like it. So God knows what it must have been like in the playoff when Wilf scored.
Well, Nick, all I will say is that cocaine is a hell of a drug. Stephen Sheffield has said, how likely is that goal to be a goal of the season? He's put, there's team goals and then there's that. Every player touched the ball at some point, total football. I mean, I doubt it because it'll probably go to Mo Salah or something. I would say there was an excellent goal from Everton as well at the weekend. Overhead bicycle kick from, what's his name, with the bleach blonde hair. Yes, I thought it was an excellent goal. I think I used one against West Ham was more of my favourite, but it was very special. And obviously, going against the run of the play more than any other game I think I can ever remember.
Ayers was individual skill, though. I mean, the one I most liken it to is when we beat Liverpool with a gegenpress a few seasons ago, that goal there. I think that was very similar, although that was more of an on-the-break goal. This was measured one or two touch.
Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it?
It was just very, very well orchestrated with each player playing a really important, crucial part and knowing what they were doing. And just that image of the young Chelsea lad, his name's gone, Gallagher, just standing with his arms out wide on the advertising hoarding. He's only there for a couple of seconds, but it made a great photo. And then you had the young Palace chap running around and dodging the stewards and then swan diving back into the crowd quite well. Unfortunately, he was still in Brighton at 3 a.m. being questioned about it, which is a shame.
Well, probably worth it in years to come. I just want to, before you speak, Chris, I just wanted to say, if you haven't seen Gallagher's post-match interviews, well worth a watch. Well worth a watch. He's so, what's the word I'm looking for? He plays down his part in it. Just saying he's doing what he should do and then gives credit to everyone else, which is pure class. Chris?
I mean, the two stats I just wanted to draw out were total shots. Brighton had 19 shots to our 3. Which is telling. And the possession was 63% for them, 36 for us. So, you know, I mean, it was back to, I'm not going to say back to Roy, but it was a more conservative approach to this game. And it's just worth, you know, flagging that up. I don't think that was a bad thing. And I think that came out in Vieira's post-match interview as well. He said it was a good point, under difficult circumstances. So, you know, definitely that's the tone we should be taking. I think it's also worth just saying, I mean, so two things about Potter. I really struggle with Potter because I always forget what his first name is, because, I mean, it's Graham Potter, isn't it? Graham Potter. But I always think, and I've actually talked to him about him, I'm possibly not on this podcast, but definitely in public before, I've talked about him as Brian Potter. And Brian,
that's the guy from Phoenix Knights, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Brain Potter.
I keep calling him Brian Potter.
See, that's a reference from within the last 50 years. You see what's happened there, Nick?
All right.
Carry on, Chris.
But the main thing that I was going to say is just that I really hope he does go to Everton and is shit there. Because if he goes there and is shit there and simultaneously fucks Brighton up when they're actually having a good season, that'd be amazing. If we could.
I don't mind what he does at Everton, but as long as he leaves, that would be excellent.
Yep.
I'm just going to wrap it up myself then. I'm going to read out Neil Kite's tweet to us. Why didn't we adopt the same gameplay strategy against Brighton as when we played them at home? We were unlucky at home and lucky away. Setup didn't make sense. Game cried out for Benteke, especially with Dunk out. Was he unwell? So I'm going to take a slightly different opinion to the way I saw it to Chris and say, I don't think it was a measured Roy-style performance. I think it was a plan that did not work. It went wrong. And what Vieira wanted and what happened on the day were very different. We've played a very similar strategy much more effectively, and it only takes one or two players, because we've only had one transfer window bringing people in. It only takes one or two players to be missing, maybe one or two to be slightly off the mark, and it's a world of difference. There's so much quality in the Premier League. It only takes a couple to be out, a couple to have a duff game. You know, Tyrick Mitchell has a not perfect game, and the difference is huge. All I will say is respect the point and all that. But yeah, we'll leave it there. We'll get on after this to a couple of rumours, and I say a couple and mean a couple, and some listener comments.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, gents. We've covered most feedback, I think, that we were going to cover, but there's a few more to come. But before that, Stuart Baldwin has tweeted and asked, what do we make about the rumours about Aaron Ramsey coming to Palace? He said, at first I thought he was crazy, but the more I think about it, the more I think he could do a good job for a year or two if his salary is sensible. I'll let you, gents, say something after I said it. I don't think that there's any player that Palace are looking for that isn't a loan, that is a year or two project, really. But, Nick?
Yeah, I think it's all about the money, isn't it? And the fact that he's injured quite a lot. Why bring somebody in that's going to be on the treatment table? We don't want another Wickham, do we? He could be good.
We've got one, but
yeah. he could be good on his day. I think he could add stuff, but he's not really long term, is he? He'd be a stopgap. Do we want stopgaps in a long term project? And just the fact that the way that Vieira talked about Brighton being further down the road in the Potter project, as he called it, kind of suggests that he's looking at staying at Palace for a little while. I don't know what you made of his comments there and how you felt about that. But Ramsey, like Stuart Baldwin said, if the salary is sensible, perhaps for a year or two, but long term, no, especially with injuries.
Chris, do we really need him anyway?
Well, I mean, we've just talked about the midfield and whether it worked today. I think we've got a range of really good options. The answer is probably we don't need him. On the other hand, you know, the thrill of seeing someone of that class playing in our colours would be hard to resist. I just don't think it works with the project. You know, we're trying to sign people with resale value, and you know, this is the opposite of that. This is a marquee signing who'll be there for 2 years on a big wage. I can't see it happening, but secretly, I definitely would love it if it did.
Yeah, I can't see it happening either. I think if Roy was still the manager, I could see it being more likely. But what the fuck do I know? Any other news? I don't really want to talk about Nketiah again, so I don't think it's anything new. Anyone else that's caught your eye, gents? Any rumours, however ridiculous?
No.
I saw a clickbait about some striker. I think it was a Spanish striker. But one, we don't need him. And two, I think it was just clickbait rubbish, so I'm not even going to dignify it.
Fair enough. And then just a few comments then. I'll start again with Will Pickering. I didn't read his cold clip out earlier, but he has asked, should the Brighton pitch invader be given the freedom of Croydon? Absolutely. He should turn up. He should wear one of those ridiculous sort of head and cloak things that Hodgson wore. He should be given a fuck-off massive key. Right. Tim Beard. Why isn't there an international break for AFCON? It's got a far bigger impact on the league than England versus San Marino or somebody. Yeah, I mean, would we be saying that if it was a win? I don't know. Anyone got any quick thoughts on that?
I think, yeah, I do. I mean, I think that it's a historic legacy of the fact that this tournament, you know, one, our league didn't really have African players in it. I mean, I think I saw Daniel Amakachi, who I think was the first African player to play in the English league. He was a Nigerian player for Everton back in about 94, 95. And I saw him at Selhurst. It was one of his early appearances, if not his Everton debut. Back in the day, an African player in the Premier League was news. Now it's absolutely not. In fact, you know, lots of the top teams have a significant number of African players, and they're some of the best players in our league. And I think it should be taken seriously the same as other tournaments should. You know, we've had the conversation already, I think, about, you know, why... I mean, I think Watford tried to... In fact, they did stop one of their players from going, didn't they? And that's indicative of the fact that that tournament's taken seriously, which it should.
They really did. It was amazing. So they talked about it on the preview pod, but... their player Dennis wasn't allowed to go to Nigeria, and then to read the comments from Nigerian fans was amazing. every Juju man that they possibly could mention. They all said, "Oh, I've spoke to my Juju man. You got bad Juju. He's gonna get you relegated." And I ended up in this rabbit hole looking about the history of Juju and Magic, and it was amazing. I learned loads. Awesome. Yes, Watford scum. Carry on.
Yeah, so I mean the end of that point was just really in future, given that this tournament now happens every 2 years and they're threatening to make the pointless European Championships every 2 years as well. If they're going to have an international break for the European one, they should have an international break for the African one, because it has every bit as much of an impact on lots of teams in the Premier League. So the Premier League needs to get its house in order on this.
It's difficult because if they're historically not at the same time and then COVID's messed it up as well, it's not easy. If they could all be aligned at the same time, I mean, that's the obvious answer, but you've got a Southern Hemisphere and Northern Hemisphere problem, haven't you? Yes, I don't think that a pod as humble as ours is going to give you an answer there, Tim. Mark Collins, does Riederweld have a future at the club? Decent on the ball, and therefore you think a Vieira type of player, but he hasn't really had a look in. Nick, does he have a future at the club? He seems to be the man that bounces back in every situation.
Yeah, he's bulked up a bit, hasn't he, since we last saw him last season. I saw some rumours last week saying that he might be off. I hope not, because he can be quite good at times. Who knows what goes on in training,
Is that rumour basically from the fact that the Riederweld t-shirt, which is really rubbish in the Palace shop, has gone down to 10 quid? Is that where it comes from?
It might be. How much is the James McArthur pophead? We were talking about the Max Meyer one, weren't we, in the car, because it's life size.
We were. Nice. Yeah, those. Nice. They've hardly got any of them left in stock. It's basically players who've left. The James McCarthy one is still there for £1 on the club shop if anyone wants one of those.
And also, the fact that Guess Who is now really, really cheap, because none of the players in that game feature for our team anymore.
Actually, was in a pub recently, and it's great to see finally in well into the 21st century that Guess Who now has an equal amount of female and male people in it, because it was always like four women and the rest men, wasn't it? So yes, good work, Guess Who. About 70 years late, but also makes your game harder as well, because if you chose a woman, you were fucked, weren't you? Right, Mark Brooks Duncan. Gallagher said in his post-interview that we set to hit up Brighton on the break. Do you think they deserve enough respect for us to change our usual possession football to a more Roy approach? I'm not sure we did change our possession football, but Chris?
I agree with you that I don't think we really changed it that much. I mean, we made enforced changes with who was playing, but I don't think we necessarily tried to change the style. But that said, I do think they deserve respect as a footballing side. As a club, they're obviously not worthy of respect at all. but as a unit that Potter has got playing really damn well, unfortunately, they've outplayed us both matches. So, yes.
No, they didn't outplay us at Selhurst. They were lucky to get the equaliser. I'm sorry, I'm not having that.
All right, let's leave that there, shall we? One more question. Chris Chantry, is there a reason both Roy and Patrick Vieira would rather play Schlupp in the centre and Eze out wide when both play better the opposite way round? Nick?
That's kind of what I alluded to earlier, wasn't it?
It sounded that way,
I don't know. I really don't know. I can't get inside their heads, but Schlupp is a better winger. And did he actually go on the wing when we made the subs? We actually had Benteke and Mateta on, didn't we? And we took Elise and Eze off. Who was playing on the wings?
Schlupp definitely. We still didn't have many or any crosses, but there was a bit of overlap that I noticed. I'm not sure, to be honest. That kind of analness is for Hambo only. And incidentally, Hambo is not joining us today because he was detained and he has been volunteering at a dogs trust, a dogs charity. So he was meant to be on the pod, but he got held up because people weren't there. So good on Mr. Hambo. Right, let's finish with a few forward reviews. I'll read them out and then say some last words and we shall do one. So a couple of forward reviews from our usual post-game Twitter post out. James, at James D. Ring. Interesting. Is that your name or is that some Ring reference?
It's actually
Jimmy. James okay. Ring. Okay. Sorry. You're not D. Ring yet. Although maybe you're... Maybe you are amongst friends. I don't know.
Just read it out.
Yes, we will take that. I didn't even read it right. I read five words. Yes, we'll take that. Sorry, James. At Elliot Westgate. Oh, I've not even read that right. This is a disaster. Elliot Westgate. At Westgate. Elliot, I'm starting to worry. Elliot, come on now. There's some poor teams in the league this year, and they keep beating each other as well. Leif Anderson's forehead, a lucky point stolen, absolutely, definitely. At Kevin TAE Steph, have I read that wrong as well? Strangely, I enjoyed it. Really, Kevin? I aged about 3 years. At Parky 10,000, got out of jail, yes. At Edmunds Mark, that was bloody awful. Fair enough. Red and Blue Phil, decent result in circumstances. Neil Kite, they can't beat us. Yeah, unfortunately, we can't really beat them this season either. Martin Carter, concerned about our right sides. Yeah, I think we've discussed that. Chris Gunn, Jack Butland, man of the match, easily. Yes, he won man of the match, I'm assuming, gents?
For me, he did.
I think he did overall as well. Edward Potter, gross denied by Butland. I disagree. Gross was denied by taking an absolutely shit penalty. Zach S, sheesh, we scraped by. Carl Tushingham, we missed Wilfried Zaha. Okay. Fair enough. And we'll end with Laurie Bullock. Weed couldn't beat us. So, yes, thank you for listening to the show. Thanks in particular to everyone who got in touch. We read them all. We can't necessarily use all your comments. We try and incorporate them all into the show. And I try to read out as many as possible as well. Please keep them coming. It shows that at least some of you are listening. Preview team, we'll be back with you midweek to look ahead to Sunday's home game against Liverpool. Gents, we're all there. Is it a 2 o'clock game?
I believe so.
Okay, so there'll be a few beverages afterwards if you want to join us. I was thinking of going back to Croydon for a change. I don't know how you lot are feeling, but yes, we shall be having some beers after the game. As ever, plenty more content for you across all of our social accounts and a wealth of live and recorded shows for you over on YouTube, including instant match reaction and a chance to get involved. Find us on everything by searching Back of the Nest and like, subscribe and be merry. Until next time, come on, you Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.